Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined by the voices of my childhood watching the Ottawa Senators, my now friends, Gord Wilson and Dean Brown. And I just said that for you too, so you guys could feel older than you really are. So I appreciate
Mission accomplished. Thank you.
So I appreciate you both taking the time and doing this. And it's been honestly a pleasure to getting to know you covering the Sens this year, and maybe talk about how it all got started for both of you, kind of in the booth together, calling Senators games.
You start, Dino.
Well, you know what, Alex? We started together, but not in the booth, because when Gord joined CFRA, when he joined the station, he joined to do football, and he was doing sidelines and stuff, and so I was up in the booth. But we were broadcast partners in football before we ever became broadcast partners in hockey. It's just in hockey we were in the booth together. Then basically when hockey came to town, our radio station at that time, 580 CFRA, got the rights, and Don Holtby was the boss, and he told both of us that we're not just going to give you guys these jobs. You got to apply like anybody else. Well, anybody else who was applying had a tape of themselves doing hockey. We Gord and I didn't. We were doing football. So the station arranged for us to get a little bit of booth time in Montreal. The playoffs were going on in Montreal, and they gave us a little booth space. And so we drove to Montreal, and we literally had a tape recorder and a couple of microphones, and we recorded our play-by-play and color onto a cassette and gave it to the boss. When we just rotated, one period I'd do play-by-play, and Gord would do color. The next period, Gord would do play-by-play, I'd do color, and we just did that. And we handed in the tape, and they hired us. So and then off we went.
Was
Let's clarify the booth situation. In Montreal, it was at the old Forum, right? The historic Montreal Forum. And it wasn't so much a booth, but it was a row with little glass or small wall partitions in between. And what was extremely thrilling for us, and perhaps a little bit nerve-wracking as well, is we sat right beside the legendary Dick Irvin, which was intimidating, but at the same time, just an absolute thrill. And I know Dean can attest to this. We both grew up listening to Dick, the wonderful Dick Irvin, and he couldn't have been more helpful and more accommodating for two young kids, basically, or 30-year-old kids going into Montreal on a couple of occasions to get an opportunity to hit play and record on our cassette. You would not know what a cassette recorder is, I'm guessing, but it's play and record. The tape goes in, and you hit stop when you're done. And yeah, what a fantastic time to start things out.
Was it seamless in terms of maybe not on the air, just because it takes a little while to get used to each other, but just that friendship, camaraderie between the two of you, did that take a while, or was it kind of pretty natural?
Yeah, no, it was very natural. And Dino, I'll take this one because we actually started out as arch enemies in the radio careers here in Ottawa. Dean was working for 580 CFRA. I was at a competing radio station then known as CKBY, Y105, and Oldies 1310. CKOY it was known as back in the day. I actually just drove by there this morning. It was located, the two radio stations were located on the 19th floor of Place de Ville, Tower B, corner of Kent and Queen. And we were arch enemies, not so much. I got into sports. I was doing overnight news, et cetera, and got into sports. The first news conference, and I'll never forget this, Dean, the first news conference or sports conference that I went to, I was sitting at the back, kind of minding my own business, and you sat down, Brownie, in front of me, and you were in a little better shape back then. And all I could remember was seeing you in a sports jacket, and Alex, his wingspan was 747. Like, it was in. I go, oh my gosh. So this is Dean Brown. He's a lot bigger than I. Like, you were in fantastic shape, Dino, but at the same time, the shoulders and kind of chiseled. I was quite impressed, but I couldn't see or really, I wasn't paying too much attention to the news conference because I was almost in awe of Dean's physique. What do you think of that, Dean?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'll get Alex. This is not radio or broadcasting related, but that in mind, at that time, I wasn't that far out of playing. I was an average player, but I was in shape. I was training, so I was in shape. I'll give you a little life tip though, because when you're now my wife, Sue, when they get a hold of the old photo albums, when your sisters show up and go through the albums. You want them not to find the pictures of when you were in shape because then they go like Sue's looking through pictures of photo albums and there's me. I had the six pack and I was pretty cut up back then. And they start going, well, where's that? Let's get back to that. And they go, no, that Dean's gone. That body is not, that's too much work. That body is not coming back. So that's just a
Certainly
little
not the
life
one.
tip. Don't let them see the pictures.
Yeah, certainly not the one we're looking at right now.
How many times, Dino, do you go up to a player and just say, back in the day, I could do 40, I could do 200 pounds on a bench or something like that, and just tell them that he wants to.
Oh, never. I never do stuff like to be honest with you, unless I'm asked or somebody asks me, I never admit that I did anything athletic. It because you're always talking from the wrong side of it. I never played any professional sport. I played a lot of sports at a decent level, but I was never a professional in anything. And if you go up and start talking to players about your athletic experiences, it's kind of like the old man wannabe who wishes he was better when he was younger, talking to the young guy as if they're athletic equals. So I got to be honest with you, I never bring it up. To be honest with you, a couple of times what's happened is I've had players talk to me because their dads told them that they played against me or saw me play,
Really?
whether it was rugby or football or whatever it was or hockey, and the kids said, yeah, my dad said, and that both makes you feel old and it reminds you how average an athlete you were when you were athletic.
Totally different game at the pro level. Totally different.
What's it like, for you guys going from just going from the football level, I guess, and doing radio and being in the booth together to, doing hockey. How big of a transition was that for both of you when you got that job?
Do you know?
You know what, Alex? For me, it wasn't that big a transition because play by play is play by play. It's not much different. The pressure, and most people don't realize this, but the pressure in those situations is more on the color guy. It's more on Gord because they're very different games in the way you have to explain them. And in hockey, it's actually double because people don't realize that doing color in hockey is far more difficult than doing color on TV because TV has pictures. And Gord is in a situation, and every radio color guy is in the situation where they have to basically very quickly in the same amount of time describe everything that the listener did not see and then give them reasons why. And so you have to be more concise, you have to be more acute with it, and it's actually a harder job. But for my job, to be honest with you, technically doing play by play of soccer or basketball or football or hockey, it's play by play. And in some ways, and I had a conversation a long time ago with the late Dan Kelly, one of the greatest play-by-play guys ever. And that was before I started doing hockey. I was still doing football, and he was telling me how football actually was more difficult than hockey because football is more players. It's an explosion and then it stops. Whereas hockey is certainly faster, but it's more rhythmic. It's more, it has a rhythm to it. And when I started doing hockey, I realized that everything he had told me was true. So for me, it really technically wasn't much of a transition. But for Gord, in our business, doing radio color is far more difficult, far more challenging, and takes far more ability than doing play by play.
Gord, did you?
Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask you, Gord, did you want to always be color? Like, was that kind of your goal, or did you want to be play by play, or did it come
Did
naturally?
not matter, Alex. It did at that stage, it did not matter one bit. The fact that we were able to get up into the booth and be together was goal number one. Just be a part of NHL hockey in this city, a city that I grew up in. So, yeah, very, very fortunate. The transition, I was going to say the transition going from a radio station announcer, where I got the opportunity for a couple of years to do live sporting events. Very fortunate to work at the number one radio station that was covering the CFL at the time, and getting a chance to work a live sporting event sort of set the tone. I think the lifestyle change was the biggest adjustment I can remember. And back in 1992, we did commercial flights only. And as a team, it can be very difficult to coordinate traveling and getting two flights on time and connections and everything else. So there was a lot of time, and I had a young family, one young daughter at the time, well, baby, and being away from her was tough, but at the same time, the travel schedule was more of an adjustment than anything else. Once you get up into the booth and you get into the flow and you're sitting beside, a guy that you respect so much, that's easy. That's the easy part. It was the lifestyle change that really, really, I had to adjust to. And in fact, at Christmas time, I thought, I don't think I'm going to laugh. And at near the end of the season, I tell this story often, and near the end of the season, Dino, I don't know if you remember, we were sitting in the Vancouver airport and it was packed and we had nowhere to sit. So we were on the floor. And our flight got delayed and we had 6 hours to, travel back east. And it was a long road trip to begin with. You're out of money. You're feeling low. The team had probably gone 0 for 5 or 0 for 6 on the road trip. And I remember sitting there thinking, this may not be for me. And Jamie, I told this to Jamie Baker, who was a first year senator. And he said, you know what? It's discouraging right now, but give it a month and you're going to pine for the next season to start. And I remember the words like they were spoken to me yesterday, because he was exactly right. And he was probably off by a week or two. I needed 3 weeks to decompress and think about the next year. It was pretty simple, and could not wait for the next season to start. And obviously, what 30, 33 years later, it's yeah, knock on wood every day.
What do you think Dino and Gord just is the key to maybe a successful broadcast? Like, what is it, just how much of it is the chemistry? How much of it is, the storytelling? What are maybe some of the keys for a good radio broadcast?
Well, I think Alex, the two biggest things, and it's not for hockey, it's for anything in broadcasting, but I think the two biggest things, and I'm not sure if one takes precedence over the other, but the two biggest things is be yourself, be
Bang
authentic,
on.
and have fun. People love sports because it's fun, and so if you're having fun, they enjoy the broadcast more. They have more fun. And especially nowadays, it's not like the old days of radio and Johnny Fever, where you could have a totally different persona on the air than you are in real life. People now are so media competent. They understand the media. You can't fool them on the air. I tell young broadcasters this all the time. The hardest thing in our business is to find yourself on the air. Be yourself. Because you always, when you're young, you want to be a compilation of what you think the job is or the people that you admire, and you're trying to kind of copy them, and you're trying to find out who you are. The guys that are the most successful the quickest are the ones who find themselves and are just able to be themselves on the air. So don't be a phony, whoever you are. If you're a funny guy, be funny. If you're not, not. If you're into stats and stuff, do that. But whatever you are, be that on the air, because you can't fake it. You can't fool people. And they're either going to like you or they're not going to like you, but you're never going to be worried about, am I the real person on the air? Gordon and I, to be honest with you, we're idiots, and we know we're idiots. We've always been idiots. We've always been 12 years old. And I think one of the keys to our success, and we've been successful, I think one of the keys is we don't pretend we're not. Just when you listen to us, you get what you get. And people go, ah, it couldn't be that dumb. No, they can. They can be that dumb. They are that dumb. But the key is they don't try to pretend they're not, So I think probably the two biggest things, in the overarching macro view of things, the two biggest things are be authentic, be you, and don't be scared to have fun. Have fun at your job. People like people having fun. They enjoy it more.
Yeah, best advice that I ever got was from Dean, and that was be yourself. Simple as that. Don't try to be anybody you're not. And it's interesting because probably at about the 30th game of the first season, where the Senators, I don't know, Dean may have had 5 wins. We got to the point where when it was 4-0 or 5-1 after 1 period of play, we kind of looked at each other, and Dean, I remember you saying, "We got to make this entertaining, or we're going to lose them." And it went from there. Excuse me, it went from there.
We had Alex years ago. We had a general manager at the radio station back when we first started doing this, and he was very much into research and got research from companies down in the States that kind of the in the radio business, a lot of the trends in the United States, we're here in Canada about 5 years after those industry trends. So and one of the interesting things, and I tell kids this when I'm talking to broadcasting courses and stuff like that. One of the first questions is I and I kind of trap them. I do. I admit it. I say to the class, I said, "Would anybody like to describe what I do for a living? Like not Gordon, I just my job. What do you think my job is?" And the kids are all throwing their hands up in the air, and it's to as correctly and quickly as you can describe everything that's going on the ice surface and give the listeners at home a true view of what's going on. And I go, absolutely wrong. And they're kind of stunned. And I said, at the professional level, at university radio stations or college or whatever, or amateur ones, whatever you want to do is whatever you want to do. But at the professional level, this is a business. And that means you have to have listeners. And in radio ratings, it's blocks of 15 minutes. How many people listen for blocks? And you try to get as many people as you can in each 15-minute block and then carry them to the next block. So you have a consistent number. And so I tell them that your job is to make sure people don't hit the button. Your job is to make sure that whatever you're doing is entertaining and compelling enough that they don't go and do something else. So if the game isn't entertaining or isn't entertaining enough, you better be. And again, you use whatever methods are natural to you, whether it's humor, whether it's statistics, whether it's stories, whether it's a combination of both, whatever it is that you bring to the table, that's when you have to use that in conjunction with, I have to be honest with you. During a couple of 10 years ago or whatever, people would say, you and Gord were really goofing around last night on the air. And I said, what was going on the air? And they said, well, it was an Ottawa, New Jersey game, and it was 1-0 in the third period. I said, yeah, exactly. Nothing had happened in the entire game. That was what an Ottawa, New Jersey game was. Nothing occurred. So, yeah, Gordon and I were goofing around a lot because we were trying to get you to stay at our radio station. And that's the business reality of it. So, yeah, we're going to call the game. We're going to call the goals. None of that gets deleted. But it's our job to make sure that the broadcast is entertaining, fun, and compelling for you to stay with us. And that's what the job is.
Is that something like Gord that you prepare for a little bit? Because I remember listening. I told you about this in person. I forget what game, but they were playing. There was a Latvian player, and you guys just started talking about all the Latvians who had played for the Senators. Is that something that you almost like those little tidbits that you try to prepare for an Ottawa, New Jersey game or something like that?
I'd say yes and no. I think it's spur of the moment and reaction more than anything else. And I think what goes with that is the fact that we both do an awful lot of prep work. Okay, it's just homework, 7 or 8 hours worth before a game starts, or even day or 2 days before a game starts. You're always looking for something, and it's a help that we both do similar kinds of research, but at the same time come up with different things. And I think what makes the connection work is we're able to read off each other, and we might have the same facts, or we might not, and we can throw in, but we still know the same storylines, right? So it works well that way. It certainly does.
Is that almost like the hardest part of the job in a sense, is like that homework, or is it more scary going live? I don't know. I've never.
Well, sorry, Dino, go ahead.
I was just going to say there's no hard parts to the job. It's it, and I'm not and I'm not saying that to be glib. It's fun. Like again, when I'm talking to the students, I tell them, I say, like preparation is there. The guys who don't last in this business are the ones that don't prepare. You have to have something available some information, statistical, biographical, a good story on every player. So if Gord brings up somebody and starts talking about something, I have something to add at the end that isn't covering his story or taking his story. It's adding to his story. Well, if I don't do any research, I'm just going, yeah, Gord, face off to the left. You know, like you, it's not a conversation anymore. So what I tell kids is I say, like, I'm not going to try and pretend that the preparation we do is the same as a final exam, but we do as much preparation for each game as a high school student would do for a midterm exam. It's roughly the same amount of studying and prep work. So my point to students is, you know, this job is not complicated in the sense that the people who do it well work. You got to do the work. You got to show up at the rink every day and know what's going on, not just the stuff that's a story, but other stuff that you see that you might bring up in a game too. You know, he'd been working on that in practice for that only comes from going to practice every day, showing up to work every day. Number one, number two, doing your prep work on game day. And that's what makes it work. It's the willingness to do the work. And the question is not, can you do it for a game or two? Can you do 100 games a year like that? Because I always say it's very similar to being a dairy farmer. You know, I grew up in an agricultural community and my first brother-in-law was a dairy farmer. So I always use this analogy. Anyone can milk a cow. Do you have the diligence and determination to get up every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning and milk the cow? That's what the job is. And it's the same with Gordon and I. Can anybody call a game? Almost anybody can call a game. Can you do 100 at the same level? Back to back to back to back. Do you have the diligence and the stick-to-itiveness to do the research that's required, do the work, and show up every day at the rink to do it 100 times? And that oftentimes, Alex, is the simple differentiator. It's, are you willing to do the work? It's not like you have to be a Mensa grad to be able to do this job. Gordon and I, as we've mentioned, are not the sharpest knives in any drawer, but can you and are you willing to do the work? And fortunately for us, both of us, very much enjoy the work. So it never feels like a job ever. I've never gotten home and said, man, when is this going to be over? Like I've never said that. And that's how I know how lucky I am and how much I appreciate having this job and still having this job and working with someone who in that regard is just like me. In that area, Gord and I are just like each other. Gord, I know this, we've never had this conversation, but I know Gord enjoys doing the work as much as I do. And that happens before we get in the booth. It's just that makes this part easy. I never put it this way. I never show up in the booth and wonder, is Gord ready to go tonight? If I pitch him a rock, if I pitch him a high hard one, is he going to be able to respond? That never happens. That never pops into my mind. I never think about that because it's never happened and it never will.
So you learn something new every day. The dairy farming thing is the new angle that I had not heard of before. And I can tell you that I've been swinging a hammer here doing construction at the cottage for the last several weeks. My hands are killing me. They would love to get a hold of some teats right now and just milk a cow. That's how good that would feel for me.
What's that motion again?
I think it's this, is it not? I don't know. I think I've only done it once at a competition that I lost, so.
See, I know that competition. That's the one down at City Hall, the Farm Aid thing. Yeah. I don't mean to gloat here, Gord. I won that competition.
Yeah, you know, I got milk all over me, so. Glad you asked, Alex.
Yeah, that's exactly where I wanted to go, so I appreciate that.
I just wanted to say the word teat.
Yeah.
See, he's 12 years old. He's 12 years old.
Well, that's what they say about, you know, a good broadcast. It's like podcasting or someone in, you know, in your backyard, you know, or not in your backyard, but on the couch kind of shooting the shit and chatting. And I wonder about that a little bit with you guys, is because I think, you know, as a local broadcaster, there's that kind of not tension, but maybe a feeling that you need to be a bit more of a homer and cheer for the team. What's that like, maybe that role play in terms of feeding the fans what they want, but also kind of being slightly objective? Like where's that line for either of you? Maybe.
Well, I can tell you that you have to be objective when you're up in the booth. A goal is a goal and a nice play is a nice play, regardless of who makes it. But I would challenge anybody to spend 8 months with the same players in the same environment and not feel like you want to share in a little bit of their success. It's human nature. You don't, it, I mean, I don't, my human nature says, I don't need to wish ill will on anybody, regardless of personality. So it may seem like you sound like a homer, but spend 8 months with the same guys, at the rink, in a locker room, on a bus, on a plane, in a hotel lobby, at breakfast, no matter where. You become a little bit, I won't say attached, but you accept a greater appreciation of what the players do and go through.
The other thing too, Alex, is familiarity isn't necessarily favoritism. Gord's absolutely right. You're around these guys all the time, so you have a familiarity and an understanding. That doesn't mean when we go on the air, we don't, you listen to us. We don't avoid pointing out that a guy made a mistake because mistakes happen every game all the time. It's not a sin. And I tell people all the time when they ask that question, I go, I don't deny for a second. I want the Senators to win. I want them to go a long ways in the playoffs, and I want them to get to the Stanley Cup for a number of reasons that have nothing to do with favoritism, just really simple, selfish reasons. Gordon and I get paid by the game. Some people don't realize this. We don't work for the team. We are contracted by the radio station to do the games. So if they play more games, playoff games, we get paid more. So I want them to play a long time every year, and I want them to go to the final. Number one. Number two, I live here. This is my home. My wife is from here. My kids have grown up here. They've never known any other place. It's their home team. They want it to win. And for 8 months of the year, we're around a group of guys. They are a lot happier people when they are winning. So that makes our lives better. Not that they treat us any differently professionally, but they're just happier people, and it's easier to interview them when they have a good feeling about themselves. And that happens for professional athletes if they're winning. So I don't pretend for a second that I don't want the Senators to win. I do. I absolutely do. But when you ask me, does that change the way I call the games? My answer is no. What happens, happens. We live in a market where there's a hockey expert every 15 feet. So if you're going to go on the air and tell them fairy tales, they're going to know you're full of shit, and they'll know it immediately.
Hey,
It's a podcast, Gord. I can say that.
You can
no,
so
we're in
here,
front of a
but
microphone.
here's but here's the other thing, Alex. Here's kind of the barometer we deal with. Almost all, I think, all of the people in the United States, the radio people in the United States who do what Gord and I do, almost all of them work for the team. They're team employees. And when we're on the road all the time, we sit in the stands talking to them, during the morning skate. And often people say, "Oh man, I heard you guys, like, we could never say that. I can't believe you guys. Oh, you got, if we said that about a home team player," we get that all the time, all the time. So it all depends on your perspective. If you perceive that someone is a homer, it doesn't matter what they say or do. That's how you perceive them. If you don't, you don't. And many years ago, I used to worry about that, but for many more since then, my give a crap meter on that is zero. You're going to think what you think, and I don't care if you think I'm a homer or not. I do the games. I know that I do as good an objective game as I can do. I tell you what I see. I tell you what I see, and I tell you what I think. And if you think I'm a homer because of that, I'm fine with that. I don't really care. But just the people that Gord and I run into who do our job and work for teams, I know that many, many things that we say and do, they would get fired for.
Did you just hear the sirens in the background?
No.
Oh, okay. The show's on fire.
Well, thank you, Gord. I needed that. Maybe Gord, what are some of the memories that you remember when the Sens were on fire and going to the 07 Cup run and maybe even 2017 as well? What are those memories like and those experience like as a, as you said, not just getting paid more to do more games, but also the environment and the maybe the exhilaration that you have.
Yeah, a wonderful transition because I was thinking of the 07 run here and this city, right? This city came alive, and I got some pretty good business connections. And as the playoffs went on in 07, there were business people telling me that the town would probably shut down if it won the Stanley Cup. And getting to the final, obviously, it took a while. And getting to the final was not just a marvelous experience, but it was an eye-opener in terms of how this city could embrace the home team. And obviously, losing game five in Anaheim was extremely disappointing. But what I often say and remember almost the most about that loss, and there's a reason they call it a final, right? It's final, win or lose. And if you're on the wrong end of the final, it's a crappy feeling. It's shitty. And what I remember the most, though, of that run was coming back to Ottawa the next day after the loss, and at least 5,000 people along the Airport Parkway. Dean and I walked out of the rink, the Honda Center in Anaheim. I think it was called the Arrowhead Pond, if I'm not mistaken, at the time. We walked out of that rink after the game, and there was nobody around. Nobody, like no fans, nobody. It was bizarre. And we go back to the hotel, we go out for a couple of beverages, we come back to Ottawa the next day, and there's 5,000 people lined up along the Airport Parkway, starting at the habitat where the Senators park and departed from. They were lined up, and it was miles of people lining the street and the parkway, and that will forever stick in my mind. And from there, you knew that at some point, and I will say this forever, the city is deserving, every city is deserving of a championship run. And being an Ottawa kid, this one in particular for me, and it's going to be phenomenal when the team does achieve that goal and win the Stanley Cup. So that certainly stands out for me, that run. 2017 was a fun one for sure, an unexpected one, I think. But you embrace the moment, right? And lightning in a bottle only happens a few times. It's rare, but when it does, you embrace it even more. The 2015 run with the Hamburglar was, I mean, the 10th of February, there are 10 games or 14 points out of a playoff spot, and okay, here we go. We're gearing up for another summer. And then all of a sudden, they catch fire. They catch lightning in a bottle, and that was another one of those spectacular moments.
See, that was glass half full, Gord, giving you that explanation, all the positive things. When I think back to 07, it just makes me angry, I got to be honest with you. Because and I know it sounds like I'm kind of making a joke here, but the Senators in many ways in that series got screwed by the league. And
100%.
I will bang that drum forever. The number of
9 days.
days The number of days they had to wait to play just because the Samuelis, who own the building there, still own the building there, the couple, had some concerts that apparently they couldn't move, and so, or some events they couldn't move, so the series couldn't start. Ironically, they had some injuries to some key players that needed to be healed, so it was a long gap, and Ottawa was just sitting there waiting, and they started losing all their mojo. Number one. Number two, it's always been the case in this league where some veteran players get more leeway. But early on in that series, you could see that Niedermeyer and Pronger were allowed to do stuff that nobody else was allowed to do. There was a hooking, holding, interference, or roughing penalty from one or both of those players on every single shift. And after, I think it was the first or second game, after every game in a playoff series, then and now, teams get a chance to meet with the supervisor. And when it's the final, it's usually Colin Campbell and the head of officiating that have the meeting. So you're at the highest level if you want to make some complaints. Brian Murray had the video staff, which was one guy back then, put together a video of all the fouls committed by those two players that went completely uncalled, and showed it to the league and said, "Hey, like, what's the deal here? Like, this goes on and on and on and on." And you know, I guess for, you know, Brian telling the story, yeah, they nodded, yeah, okay, we'll have a look at that. The next game, the first penalty of the game was Chris Phillips' interference at the blue line. And Brian Murray afterwards told us, told me, I forget who was there, said, yeah, that was the league telling Brian to stuff it in his hat. And nothing changed in that series. Pronger and Niedermeyer specifically, and a couple of guys up front as well, and Perry and Getzlaf, were pretty much, there was no rule book for them. They could do anything and everything they wanted to do, and the rule book didn't apply to them. And I guess in one hand you can say, well, you know, you have to do that too. Well, you can only do that if you get, if your players get the same leeway, and Ottawa's players didn't. So I still have a problem with the gap they had to deal with to start that series, and how ineffective the complaints were from Ottawa about the officiating in that series. And I don't care how many people show me videos and stats, I will never change my belief about that. And that's just me.
Yeah, glass half full, right, Alex? Okay, that's how he started it off. Glass half full. Yours truly. 17 years later, bitter and
Yeah, still bitter.
disappointed.
I
And
admit I'm still bitter. I admit I'm still bitter. Because I don't know if Ottawa would have won. I don't know, but I don't believe it was a level playing field, starting with when it started in that ridiculous gap.
well, that dumb run, Brian Murray, I mean, they went. So they go 15 games in the first three rounds, four games to one, four games to one, four games to one, I think. And then 9 days off in between series. And Brian was actually holding practices at 7:30 at night just to try and acclimatize the guys and get them back into game mode, game rhythm.
What's it been like for you guys now? Just, they haven't made the playoffs in 7 seasons.
Sorry. I take that back.
It's okay. It's okay. Just what's that like for you guys? Not just, the product being, but how do you maybe try to liven up the broadcast, as you guys said, like to keep people engaged, but also how tough is it for you guys just not to have that those, playoff moments as broadcasters?
Well, it's painful. There's no question. As selfishly speaking, we want to get there, and paycheck wise, but as well, the building comes alive. There's nothing like that building when it's playoff hockey. It's just absolutely phenomenal. That being said, this year was probably the most disappointing in terms of not achieving any goals. And I realized that expectations were set way too high at the start of the season. But at the same time, last year they finished 6 points out of a playoff spot. The year before that was 27. So they made progress. This year they took a step back, and I don't think too many people were expecting that. And obviously, coaching change, the goaltending woes, just a number of different, the Shane Pinto situation, the Josh Norris injury, things mounted and added up and led to some pretty serious disappointment if you're a diehard Senator fan. And I think even those of us looking at it fairly objectively going into the season expected more. And you can accept missing the playoffs if you know that there's the opportunity to play yourself into getting the opportunity to play in the playoffs. And this year, they had too many nights where you knew that there wasn't they weren't even going to be close.
I think I was like anybody else, Alex, because it's all based on expectation. Gord's exactly right. I don't. And we have the perfect example. The whole poster child for the whole concept is just down the road in Toronto. When you have a team that's perennially selected in its own market to be a Stanley Cup contender, keeps going out in the first round. If that when the ex when the expectation is not even close to being met, that's when you have. Frustration and disappointment. And I will openly admit that I was one of the guys that was completely wrong. Last year, I at the beginning of the season, I would have said, there's no doubt in my mind. Well, I don't have to. I did say this. It's a playoff team. It's a playoff team because to me, all the important players had all taken steps forward the year before, with the exception of Norris because he was injured so much. But all the important players had taken steps forward. They were now all nudging into their prime years. And so I thought this is a playoff team if they just get goaltending. But it just tells you how much, let's go back to how dumb we are or how dumb I am. I have
We
learned that when anybody asks me in the future about what I think about a goaltending trade or signing, I'm just going to tell them I don't know. Because I thought originally that that Matt Murray was a fantastic signing. I thought this has changed everything. Couldn't have been more wrong. So they go out and get the guy from Minnesota. Just went to the All-Star game. I said, last one, that was an unexpected flop. But now they got the no, I couldn't have been more wrong. And this year when they signed the Finn,
Corpus Allo.
I said to myself, he's 2 years out of the hip surgery. He's got his game back in form. Apparently, he's in fantastic shape, and he's a great guy, and he is a great guy. I thought this is gonna. Well, Look at the season he had. Look at the season both goaltenders had. So what I've realized now is that I am clueless when it comes to prognosticating about goaltenders. So in the future, Alex, if you ask me a question, what do you think about this goaltender? Expect silence, because I'm not going to say anything, because I've now come to the realization that I am stupid when it comes to goaltending.
What do you think, maybe, Gord, of this season? Like, if we transition a little bit to the team on the ice, what are the expectations? As you mentioned, they might have been too high last year. Is the expectation still to maybe be a playoff team? It feels as though that might be pretty tough. There's going to be obviously a lot of changes in the offseason with different players and free agency and signings and et cetera. But what do you think the like realistic expectations are for this team?
Well, first of all, Dean's last comment was bang on about being stupid. That being said, it's impossible to predict. And you're already trying to make a prediction here by assuming that there's going to be lots of change in the offseason. How do we predict that? How do we predict that? Lots of change involves lots of other teams and lots of other moving parts. And there are 32 teams in the league. And even the Stanley Cup winner is going to make changes in the offseason. So there's going to be a ton of pressure on Steve Staios if he's hoping to change the complexion of this team. And obviously, mission accomplished, number one, in getting Travis Green as the head coach. I think it's far too early, far, far too early to make any kind of prognostication on expectations this year. This is a team that's got a long way to go. A lot of work to do here. And it starts with the new head coach and a coaching staff. And fingers crossed that Daniel Alfredsson stays on and this team moves forward here. But I think it's fairly clear there has to be personnel changes as well. Which ones happened? Who knows? I mean, it's Ottawa, okay? And we're not sugarcoating anything here. There are players who have on their 10-team no-trade list. Ottawa's on it. A lot of players. Ottawa is on a no-trade list. It's a reality, unfortunately. So it will be interesting. You certainly like the direction the team has now taken with ownership, with management, with the coaching staff. And again, I'll reiterate, lots of pressure on Steve Staios to see what direction. Because he observed, and he's done a terrific job of just doing that, observing, putting feelers out, finding out what other teams think or what other hockey people think of his hockey team. It's impossible here on the 3rd of June to determine what kind of expectations should be placed on this team at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, that's 100% right. You can't prognosticate how good the team is going to be until you know what the team is. And there are so many questions. And you wonder how many of those things that Staios will be able to get to. There's lots of things that have to change. But, you know, Steve, like any general manager, is in the situation where he can only move as fast as the marketplace will move. You know, he might want to make this change, that trade, this trade, that trade. If no one will trade with you to get what you want, then you have to wait. And so just because there's lots of things to do doesn't necessarily mean they will all get done. And it's not because Steve isn't trying to do it. It's because you can only move as fast as the marketplace will. You know, but you start running down the questions. You know, which guys, they got 7 UFAs and they got 15 RFAs they still have to deal with. You have to choose which ones you want to keep, which ones you don't, and how much budget you have for any or all of them. You have to decide if your goaltending wasn't good enough, which it wasn't. Is that an internal, our guys will be better, or is that an external, we got to go get somebody and they've got to be part of our package? Is Sogard ready to be an NHL player, a backup at least? Is that part of the equation? What are you going to do on, you know, as far as right side defensemen go? Lassie Thompson's gone. Organizationally, they only have 5 right shot defensemen in the organization, not just the NHL, in the organization. And there's a good chance in Travis Hamonic that he won't be coming back one way or the other. Could be bought out, don't know. But that would knock it down to 4. As far as right wingers on this team in the organization, players, they can move forwards around, but in natural right wingers, they have 6 right wingers in the entire organization right now under contract. That's all. 6. 3 in Ottawa, and three in Belleville. You know, so there's some areas where, you know, you've got to spice up the numbers, and they will, and they are. But you can't make prognostications about the season until you see what those things are. You know, the lots of conversations about left shot defensemen, and you know, are they going to move one? And if they do, is it going to be, you know, it's not going to be Sanderson. If they do move one, is it going to be Shabbat? Is it going to be Chychrun? Is Brännström going to get re-signed? Like, all those are very, very important questions, and none of us know the answers now. So I would predict that I can give you a prediction the first week of October, because by then training camp will be wrapping up, then we'll have a pretty good idea who's on the team, and then I have an idea about what I think of the team.
You've done some research, Alex. You didn't tell me that research was involved in this. He couldn't remember Jonas Korpisalo's name, for heaven's sakes, but he knows how many right shot he's written it
Hey,
all down.
you know why,
Okay.
Gord? Prep work. Because every time I do in one of these interviews, I keep my organizational depth chart in front of me
Yeah.
so I
Here's
can refer to
some
it.
life advice here, okay? Get a life.
This is my life, Gord. That's
Get
the
off
sad part.
season,
This is my life.
you
Prep
loser.
work and lists. Prep work and lists, man.
Oh, I know.
You want a list? I got a list. You just
He's
name
got a list.
what you want the list to be about, and I already have it.
It feels like when the Sens were sold, there was a list of different ownership groups as part of that might have come in, maybe Snoop Dogg, The Weeknd, a lot of different people. What have you just been around the team and knowing the organization so well? What have you thought of maybe the first almost year of Michael Andlauer's ownership? Does it feel, being from Ottawa, knowing the fan base so well, does it feel like it's the right guy at the right time, right place? What do you think, Gord?
100%. It feels like the right guy. I'm anxious for year number two here. Okay. I think this team would have had a different look to it if he had taken over. He and his group had taken over in June of last year, this time last year, where they had several months to build towards the season instead of September and the season's underway. If you had contemplated making changes at the head coaching spot or the general manager spot, you had to wait. And unfortunately, in season change, the Oilers are a big time exception, obviously. But when you're looking to make wholesale changes at the GM spot, at the coach spot, you don't want to do it all in the same season. And I think more than anything, I'm really looking forward to now this year of what Michael has done, what he's looked at, and what management is looking at. More anxious to see how the team looks in September moving forward here. Yeah, without question.
I think with Michael, I don't have a long list, Alex, of billionaires that I know, but of the billionaires that I have met, he's probably the most approachable and most normal guy for a
Genuine.
billionaire. You know, you would, you, and the other thing too is that he wants to hear from you. Like, if you're somewhere at a charity dinner or something, and he is there, go up and say hi. He wants to meet you. He wants to hear from you. He's so open, and like I said, to watch him in a room, he wants people to come up and tell him what they think. And like anything else, some things you keep, some things you throw away, some things you discard, some things you go, okay. But he does want to meet you. He wants Him and his wife bought a house here. Like, they want to be a part of the community. And like I said, you will be shocked at how approachable and normal he is. He's lots of fun to talk to. He's so easy to get to know and get to like. And I think the longer that he's here, you know, as far as it's only been basically half a season, the longer they have him and his wife have a chance to get out in the community and people meet them, I'm finding it hard to imagine there's going to be a bunch of people that don't like him. He's very, very easy to like, because like I said, he's the most approachable billionaire I've ever met, and he really does want to talk to you. He really does want to say hi. He really does want to hear what you have to say.
And the arena being in Kanata, has been on a talking point for a long time, and with the fan base and trying to get the downtown arena, how much impact do you think that would have on the fan base, the support for an arena to go to the center of the city, Gord?
You know, we're a long ways away from that, Alex. I honestly don't know. I just drove down there this morning, and LeBreton is, for me personally, and I used to park at LeBreton Flats and walk my way up to Place de Ville Tower B as we do full circle here. It's a long way from downtown, like the core of downtown Ottawa, in my own personal opinion. And I still think we're a long ways away. If in fact LeBreton Flats is going to be the chosen site, I've lived here all my life. I love Ottawa. It's a bureaucratic red-taped nightmare for most projects that are done here, and lengthy ones. And this will be as lengthy and bureaucratic and red-taped as they come. So I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I think eventually it's going to end up down there because economically that just makes the most sense. But the ongoing, and I hear this all the time, the ongoing, you'd get more people out if it wasn't, so far in the West End. Well, let's remember, whenever this team has been good, they've had no trouble filling that building. It's Canada and it's hockey. People will drive to see it. One thing you have to remember is if you put it downtown, there's some people who live in the West End who won't go anymore because it's too far for them. So
Yes.
there's going to be trade-offs. But I think the difference is that a downtown arena will give Mr. Andlauer and his partners far more of a chance at far more different revenues other than hockey that you don't really have now. Because you'll have hotel space downtown, now you're in the running for conventions that you weren't in line for before. With a different kind of building where you can hang more sound equipment because there's a weight contingent, how much weight you can hang from a building. With a new building that's meant for the size of shows now, there's more concerts you can get. And I don't think people know that the last time or second last time that Cirque du Soleil was here with their show, they only hung three quarters of their show because the building, the Canadian Tire Centre, the rafter system can't carry the amount of weight that show holds. Well, a new building opens all those shows up to you. It will be engineered to carry that kind of weight. So there's a whole bunch of other revenue streams. But here in Canada, in Ottawa, wherever you put the rink, people are going to go if the hockey's good because it's hockey. So, if you want to stay in the West End and refurbish this building, I think the crowds are going to be the same. But I think, for the city, it's far better to have the team downtown. But I think also for Mr. Andlauer and their partner and the partners, it's going to open up so many more revenue streams other than hockey that they don't really truly have good access to right now. So I think eventually it's going to be there. But I personally don't think that, this team doesn't work if it isn't downtown. But I think that's probably the best place somewhere downtown, whether it's LeBreton. I'm not, I'm like Gord. I don't know the negotiations. I don't know if it's LeBreton or it's
Yeah.
some private property or old federal. Like, I don't know where, but somewhere closer to downtown, maybe that changes things. But I think it is probably in the long term, probably better for Mr. Andlauer and his partners. But I don't think that if it stays in the West End, it fails. It's, just maybe not as successful as it could be, because I really believe, as and we've already talked about how many holes there are, but I really believe in the not too distant future, this is going to go from being a team that could be good to a team that's very good. And when it is, you're going to have a long run of a lot of full houses and a lot of revenue. So, that is what's going to come from the hockey. It's what you can get from the other side of the equation that I think is the real lure to downtown.
Well, I have before I let you go, and thanks so much, YouTube, for taking the time and doing this. This was a blast. I have a couple fun questions
And
for
I have a question for you before
Yep.
we go. So you tell me when you want that question.
You can go now. You have a gift.
Okay. You mentioned off the top of the show that you grew up listening to Dean and Gord, and we are now not just work mates at work. We're friends. You've gotten to know us. What did you think Dean and Gord were like, as opposed to now knowing what Dean and Gord are like? So, when you were growing up, what did you think those two old angry guys in the booth were like, and what do you think we really are as now that you know us?
I'd say, and it's a compliment. I'd say you were exactly who I thought you were. It wasn't very different from what I thought. Or you talk about being authentic on the broadcast. That's really what shines through. You always call me a big man every time I see you at the rink, and
Well, you're a big man.
Yes, that's true. But and Gord's always witty and funny, and I can always part of me can see like a Gord's reaction to however the Sens do after the game while we're riding down in the elevator. So Yeah, no, I don't think it's anything different, but it's pretty cool because I remember you guys on, or I don't know if both of you were, but on the A channel and just everything like that.
We were both on the A channel.
Way back in the day.
The new RO.
See, that used to be a joke amongst us when when Gord was interviewing somebody, and they would, after the interview's done, they would say, "Well, thanks very much, Gord." We would all say later, "Yeah, clearly he watches the new RO. I knew who Gord was."
Because for people that might not know, you guys travel together all the time. What's it like, Dean and Gord to be together all the time on the road? Any
Like
funny
this.
stories that you want to share? That's one of the questions.
We're not joined at the hip because we spend so much time together. When we're in a city, there's sometimes when we're in a city, other than the game and the plane ride and on the bus, we really don't see each other. Gord will have stuff he's doing during the day, or I'll have stuff, and sometimes you see each other, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get together and have dinner, sometimes you don't. But the thing is, we're not joined at the hip. And we don't, this is another thing people always ask. We don't room together, never have. So it's not like we're bunk mates. But to be honest with you, like anybody else, like anything else, you have to get some separation. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how well-intentioned you are, you will drive each other crazy. And I can tell you, there's a far greater chance that I would drive Gord crazy before he would drive me crazy. So I realize for our relationship to work, we can't be together all the time. And that's fine. I know it doesn't hurt Gord's feelings, doesn't hurt my feelings. It's not like we don't like each other, but over the years we've come to understand we don't need to always be together, always doing the same things. Like, I'll give you an example. We're down in Florida and there was a day off. So there's a great big mall there that's about 40 minutes away from the hotel. We took an Uber together out to the mall, got there. He's got different stores he wants to go to. So see you later. And at the end, text each other. One guy's ready to leave. We get together and leave. If one guy wants to stay, the other guy will take an Uber back and the other guy won't. And that's the way. So we start out together, but then we're off doing our own things, you know? And Gord's off looking at baby stuff for his grandson, and I'm off, buying
Getting a
shoes for my
massage.
Emily. You know, so that's kind of the way, that's kind of the way our relationship works. People think that, you guys are together all the time. Well, we're together a lot, but not all the time.
Some of our more educated discussions, though, throughout the years have evolved around eating, and there's been an ongoing debate, probably, Ronnie, for about 20 years now, maybe Jimmy John's or Potbelly's. We're both
Jimmy
big
John's.
sandwich guys, and I would go with Potbelly's and Dino with Jimmy John's. That pretty much sums up road life for the two of us.
We're not that complicated.
No.
I think the NHL sometimes doesn't feel that complicated. So I'm going to ask you, I'll start with Gord. It's the same question for both of you, but if today, Gary Bettman resigns and he says, Gord Wilson, Dean Brown, you can be the co, commissioner of the NHL. What is the first rule that you change?
You know what? It's not a rule. It would be I would start the season earlier and end it sooner. I think June 3rd, the season should be over. I think summers should start right around now for NHL players, and I have zero issue kicking things off here mid-September, certainly closer to the 1st of October if need be. But boy, what is it? The 24th of June. Things don't start until Saturday. I'm thinking the last, if this goes 7 games and it has a good possibility of going 7, Florida and Edmonton, I think it's the 24th of June, far too late for me. So that's what I would change. I would really, really heavily look into a schedule change rather than a rule change.
And Dean?
First rule that I would change would be the rules. If you talk to players, coaches, and managers, there's only one thing that they all agree on, and that's they don't understand the application of the rules. They don't understand what goaltender interference is. They don't understand the basis for suspensions or lack thereof. They don't understand what a headshot is because there's so many things. And like I've said to the league, like I've had, truth be told, I've had people from the league, from the Department of Player Safety, call me because they didn't like what I said about it. And I end up saying to one of them, I said, "You should not be concerned about what a radio guy in Ottawa thinks, or even what fans think. You shouldn't be concerned. You should be concerned that your primary constituents, players, coaches, and managers, have no idea what you're doing. That should concern you. Because like I told him, I said, if you see any public statements from any of those three groups, players, coaches, managers, the only thing they ever say publicly is, it's a hard job. That's not a compliment. You know, they won't say much more than that because anything more than that is usually a fine because it's never positive. So for me, if I got that job for one day, the first thing I would dig into is the rules and how they're applied and the parts of the rule book that you're just going to ignore. Well, Jim, take them out of the rule book then. Simplify the rule book. Number two, use technology to help officials because they are the best officials in the world, but they clearly cannot call this game. It's now too fast. There's too many cameras. So help them out. The supervisor should be fully able to buzz down, stop a game, and apply a penalty because all the supervisors are former referees. Just because they can't skate anymore at the level of the NHL doesn't mean their brain doesn't work. So give the guys on the ice a hand. Make video work the same way as it does in elite rugby. You know, one person officiates a rugby game, one person, but that person has the ability to stop the game at any time, go look at the video just to make sure that what I think I saw, I actually saw. It doesn't have to explain it to 100 people, and it doesn't take an hour. He just, I want to know, did that guy really knee that guy in the ruck, in the head? And if he, you know, and so he stops the game because he wants to. Stop mandating what the officials can look at for video and what they can't. If official has a thought about something and thinks he might have missed something, go let him fix it instead of not allowing him to fix it and then roasting him for 2 days because he missed one. Well, you didn't give him any help to not miss it. And the Department of Player Safety, that has to be dismantled in a new perspective. The league and the Players Association have to decide as a group, are you actually going to protect players or are you not? Because right now, all of us in the media are asked after every contact with the head, so do you think that's going to be a suspension or not? My answer is, who cares? I don't care. Because if the league and the Players Association are no longer concerned about their players getting struck in the head, why should I care? And the Trouba elbow in just a week and a half ago is a prime example, debating whether that was a suspendable headshot. So if you're still at the point where you're debating an intentional elbow to the head is a headshot, well, of course it is. Stop trying to parse words to be able to keep a good player in a series because you want to keep the competitive edge for one team. I get that drive, but you can't have a rule that's supposed to protect the safety and the health of players, except you never apply it the same way twice, and it leads to frustration amongst all the constituents. So if I was the guy for a day, the rule that I would change is the
Well,
rule.
yeah, you were asked one thing. Here, have another cup of vent. Okay. Vent Monday. Lord, Dino.
Fantastic, isn't it?
It's outstanding. Oh, there you go. Last sip. There you go.
Let's go a bit glass half full. How excited are you know, Gord and Dean, just to start the season? Do you need a break, or does it feel like you have that 3 weeks and then decompress and now you're ready for the season? Or how does it feel, Gord?
Well, I'll just go very quickly here. Very quickly, we'll emphasize that very quickly because I hold in my hand here a roll of poop bags, and I've got two Goldens who are pining here to get out for a walk that they haven't had yet. That being said, I lost my train of thought.
Poop will do that to you.
How
What were you?
excited are you for the
Oh.
season, and maybe do you need a break at all?
I need another couple of weeks to get the renovations done at the cottage, and then I'm good to go. It's pretty simple. I don't get me wrong. I'm enjoying the time off, and my second youngest or my second grandson just started to walk the other day, so I want to do that with
Oh,
him. But
congrats.
that being said, yeah, I'm good to go at any time. Thank you.
You do need some time because it, you know, the travel and everything does wear on your body. But I don't need nearly as much time as we have. So I would love to get back to it. And I know this is going to be a ridiculously candy cane, super sweet, you know, glasses always completely full view. But I got to be honest with you. I'm excited for every season. And I know that sounds really corny, but it really is true. The good seasons, the bad seasons, it is such a good job. It is so much fun to do. And whether the team is good or bad, it really doesn't affect how much fun Gordon and I have in our jobs. And we've talked about this many times, so I can speak for both of us. Both of us are fully aware how many people would line up to get our jobs if we didn't have them. Both of us are fully aware that we're very fortunate to have these jobs, and both fully aware of how grateful we are that we still have these jobs. So every time it's time to go back to work again, I'm always excited just because it's hockey. It's fun. And our job is a great job. And it's, you know, I always say when, you know, people ask me when I walk in the door at the rink, you were there. People ask me the same, you know, how's it going? I said, I am complaint free. There is nothing I have to complain about.
I will attest every time I asked Dean, how's it going? He's like, no complaints. Life's great. I'm here. So he's not
yeah,
BSing
for sure.
I don't think I've ever heard him not say that. So, Dean's always in a great mood, and Gord is as well. And thanks so much, you guys, for taking the time and doing this. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited to see you guys at the rink next season, and hopefully maybe some more winning, but either way, it'll be a lot of fun. So thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. I don't have any bags, so my dogs are just pooping in the yard right now.
Thank you so much for sharing that with the whole podcast, Dino.